This is chapter 3 of Canto 7, and it's Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. That's what I said. So chapter 3, Canto 7, verse... Yeah, I said it backwards. I said the chapter first. For those of you who weren't paying attention. Somebody was. Checks number 17. Sri Brahmo Uvacha. Sri Brahmo Uvacha. Uttista Tista Bhadram Tehe. Tapasido Sri Kasyapa. Varadoham Manuprapto. Viryatam Ipsito Varaha. Sri Brahmo Vacha. Uttista Tista Bhadram Tehe. Tapasido Sri Kasyapa. Varadoham Manuprapto. Viryatam Ipsito Varaha. Sri Brahmo Vacha. Uttista Tista Bhadram Tehe. Tapasido Sri Kasyapa. Varadoham Manuprapto. Priyatam Ipsito Varaha.
Bhadram te.
Sitasya Bhava. Anyone else? Sri Brahma Uvacha. Lord Brahma said, Utista, please get up. Utista, get up. Bhadram, good fortune. Te, unto you. Tapasiddha, perfect in executing austerities. Asi, you are. Kashyapa, O son of Kashyapa. Varada, the giver of benediction. Aham, I. Anupraptaha, arrived. Viryatam, let it be submitted. Ipsita, desired. Varaha, benediction. So Lord Brahma is speaking to Hiranyakashipu. Lord Brahma said, O son of Kashyapa Muni, please get up, please get up. All good fortune unto you. You are now perfect in performance of your austerities, and therefore I may give you a benediction. You may now ask from me whatever you desire, and I will try to fulfill your wish. Srila Prabhupada's purport, please listen up, it is very, very short. Srila Madhvacharya quotes from Skanda Purana, which says that Hiranyakashipu, having become a devotee of Lord Brahma, who is known as Hiranyagarbha, and having undergone a severe austerity to please him, is also known as Hiranyaka. Rakshasas and demons worship various demigods, such as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, just to take the posts of these demigods. Thus, we have already explained in previous verses. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stavditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So we're going to attempt to begin a series of lectures narrating this particular pastime from Srimad Bhagavatam, the appearance of Lord Nrisingadev and the events that preceded his appearance leading up to the killing of Hiranyakashipu. So for the next five or six classes. So what is being said here? Hiranyakashipu, the story of his becoming Hiranyakashipu is quite interesting. He's a great soul. In fact, in some places you read in the Bhagavatam, he's referred to as Sri Hiranyakashipu. Yeah? Sri Hiranyakashipu. Of course, we don't always address him like that, but he's given that distinction because actually, it goes way back where the four Kumaras, the sons of Lord Brahma, who are Brahmavadis, came to the gates of Vaikuntha And there are seven gates. So they pass through six gates very easily, being 4-year-old boys. But on the seventh gate, they were blocked by two doorkeepers, gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay. And they stopped them. The boys became extremely angry and started to chastise the gatekeepers, saying, "You are unfit to be in that position. You actually belong in the material world." After some intention, the Lord actually realized something was going on and he came. And then he mentioned how if anyone offends my devotees, they are actually offending me. So he felt he was apologizing to the four Kumaras. But then there was some, when offense is committed, even if there's some apology, there's always some loss. We use the example, when you get angry, you may check your anger. There's a story where this one boy, he would get angry really easy. He was a young boy, just a lad, maybe just before his teenage years. And so his father, seeing that this was a problem, used to tell him, "Don't get angry. And every time you feel like getting angry, take this nail and a hammer and drive this nail into this piece of wood." So he did that, and it was 36 nails, quickly. And then his father told him to pull out each one of the nails. And he did, and he said, "What is left? There is the hole that the nail created." He said, "Even if you don't use your anger, still there's always some loss, some negativity. The consciousness gets polluted." And so, the Lord, in wanting to chastise, offered these gatekeepers a benediction. It was kind of like a punishment benediction. "You may take seven births as my devotees in the material world, or you may take births as my enemies, which you'll fight with me for 3 births. The gatekeepers were thinking, to be in the material world for 7 births, that's a long time. They understood that the material world is a horrible place. Prabhupada used to say, horrible. Horrible. Not a nice place for a gentleman, Bhaktisiddhanta would say. And we don't, without going into the descriptions of the horrors of the material existence, we understand it's a place of misery, suffering, disappointment, ultimately death. And so they wanted to get back to Vaikuntha as fast as they could. So they took the other benediction, or what we say, offered by the Lord, and became demons for 3 births, Jai and Vijay. And this is the first fall down here, Hiranyakashipu. Now he's powerful. He's powerful. And he wants to become more powerful. His brother Hiranyaksha, which is the personification of greed, was raping the earth for all kinds of gold, and so much so that it caused the earth to become imbalanced and it fall from its orbit, and then the Lord incarnated as Varahadev and killed him. Hiranyakashipu was very angry that his brother was killed by the Supreme Lord. So he wanted to make vengefulness. So he decided to become as powerful as he could. So now we're hearing here he's performing austerities. The austerities that Hiranyakashipu performed could not be performed by anybody. It's not possible. He stood on his toes, tippy toes, for 100 celestial years. That means 100 years of the demigods. That's about thousands and thousands of years of the human beings. And actually it's 10,000 years of the human beings. And he simply kept his life by meditating. He actually knew the pranayama system. And by the perfection of pranayama, he could keep his body alive, although while he was meditating, a whole big, huge anthill gathered around his body, and he was holding his arms up like this while he was meditating. Sometimes it's hard for us to do that during kirtan. I'll go this high. That's as far as I can go. But he did it for 10,000 years. He had his arms up, standing on his tippy toes, and meditating. It says he was meditating. Doesn't say what he was meditating on. But he was in meditation. And he had the art of circulating his life air through his bones as his body was being eaten away by the worms and by the ants. In fact, his body became completely destroyed. All was left was a skeleton. But he was still alive because he knew the pranayama system to keep his body alive. And then, now, here's where we are from this verse. Brahma comes. O son of Kishore, please get up. Please get up. Badram te, all good fortune unto you. You have now become perfect by performers of austerities. So Prabhupada says, even the demons perform austerities. The devotees perform austerities in order to get a foothold and to get free from attachments in the material world. That's the benefit of performing austerities. It cuts away our tendencies for material desires and focuses our consciousness on Krishna. But the demons also perform austerities. Even people in the material world perform austerities. We see that a politician wants to get elected. And so he'll travel all around making campaign speeches, raising money, even maybe neglecting his family and friends just to focus his mind on that post. And sometimes they give up their sleep, and they travel, they even eat very little in order to somehow or other attain some position. And we see that in the material world. People will train, and the people who are what we say fighters or what we say athletes will train and train and train for a long time to develop a particular art. We have our yogi here. He's already performing some austere. Okay. Maybe you can teach that to the other people who are sleeping now. There's a few more around. So, yeah. So performing austerities gives you, develop an art, get a position, get some power, get some influence. So even the demons do that. There are so many examples. And Hiranyakasipu is the personification of austerity. And now he's got the benediction. He wanted Lord Brahma to come. He was thinking, mistakenly, that Lord Brahma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so when Brahma came, he welcomed him as the Supreme Lord. He glorified him in that way. And he offered nice prayers to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma said, whatever you desire, please ask. Hiranyakasipu was pleased. Now he could ask for anything and get some benediction. So what did he ask for? He wanted to become immortal. Prabhupada says this is the nature of the demoniac class. They want to become deathless so they can enjoy sense gratification as much as possible. They're attached to sense gratification. And they're attached to their material body. So in trying to fulfill that, they want to live as long as possible and enjoy as much as possible. You see, Prabhupada talks about these old men in European countries, he mentions. He doesn't say where. I think he says France. Yeah. They pay for these monkey glands. They kill these monkeys in India or in different places, and they get the glands of the monkey, and they can get this glands transplanted, and that way transplanted, and then that way they can have sex life, even when they're 80, 90. They're so attached to this sex life that they can continue on with this process. They pay large amounts of money, it's a business actually, just to enjoy or seem think they're enjoying this pleasure of material happiness. And so people will do anything to enjoy, especially in the demons. So Rani Kashipu said, immortality. Brahma said, I'm not immortal. Brahma lives for 311 trillion 40 billion years. Wow. I mean, it's a long time. 311 trillion 40 billion years. That's the lifetime of Brahma. And Brahma says, I am not immortal. Hiranyakashipu is now thinking, what can I do? So he was thinking, oh, let me think of different ways that I can continue my life and not be destroyed. So he goes on, and he asks Lord Brahma, he says, O my Lord, O best of the givers of benediction, if you kindly grant me the benediction I desire, please let me not meet death from any living entity created by you. Grant me that I will not die within the residence or outside any residence, during the daytime or night, nor on the ground or the sky. Grant me that my death may not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon or any great snake from the lower planets. Since no one can kill you in the battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore, grant me the benediction that I will have no rival. Give me the sole lordship over all living beings and presiding deities, and give me all the glories obtained from that position. He's intelligent. He's already made his notes. Furthermore, give me all mystic powers attained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any time. Brahma was satisfied by Hiranyakashipu, and he says, these benedictions which you have offered are very difficult to obtain for most men, but I give them to you. Now, Hiranyakashipu says, I'm immortal. He figures out all ways to somehow or other extend his life, what we say, eternally, we might say. But, and now, what does he do? He goes on a rampage. He wants to take vengeance against those who side with Lord Vishnu. And he sends his constables, his demon friends, to the material world, and he says, pollute all the cow pens, the agricultural fields, burn down hermitage, kill the sages, kill the Brahmins, destroy everything that's related to Vedic culture. And then, of course, the demons are very obedient to him now. Demons are obedient to other demons, not because they kind of like each other, but because they're afraid of each other. They also have some vested interests. It's like Kamsa. How was Kamsa able to get so many demons to go to Vrindavan to kill or try to kill Krishna? Because Kamsa defeated every one of those demons in a fight. He subdued them. Jai Sisi Panchatattva. He subdued those demons in such a way that they were obliged to carry out his instructions. So demons fight with demons, capture demons, conquer demons, kill other demons, and then become the supreme demon. And then they employ other demons like that. So this Hiranyakashipu, he's very powerful. And he goes on a rampage. How did he get a son like Prahlad Maharaj? Isn't that interesting? Usually, the genealogical nature is that if a person is, whatever their nature is, a son or a daughter is born into the family accordingly. So one takes birth according to one's parents. There's a similar nature, there's karma there. But Hiranyakashipu is what we say Asuryabhaja, number one. He's the king of the demons. And Prahlad Maharaj was. It's an interesting story. It's called the Garbhadhan Sanskara of Hiranyakashipu. The Garbhadhan Sanskara is the purificatory rites that one performs, both husband and wife, before begetting a child, in order to bring about a good child, a saintly child. So Hiranyakashipu, now he's powerful. He wants to start his family. What does he do? He's thinking, I need some more austerities. I need to become more powerful. So he goes to Mandara Hill, in the heavenly planets, and he starts performing more austerities. Narada Muni's watching the whole scene. He's watching this demon become more and more powerful. And now he's thinking he's going to become more powerful. He's already subdued all the demigods. He threw Indra off his throne, took the throne of Indra, and captured and subdued all the demigods to become his servants. He was fearful. He was feared by everyone. He was so ferocious. And then Narada Muni is watching him, and he's performing more meditation and more austerities. See, anything material you get, if you have the material consciousness, you always want more of it. If you get money, you want more money. If you have sex life, you want more sex life. If you want position, you think how to increase the influence of your position. It perpetuates itself. The same with devotees. Devotees have that same tendency, but for Krishna. We chant, we want to chant more. We can say we distribute books, we want to distribute more books, because Prabhupada becomes more pleased. We read the Bhagavatam. We get a taste for reading. We want to read more. So in Krishna, we're doing service. We always think how we can do more service. How can increase the quality of whatever service. Devotees always thinking more. The demons, the materialists who are successful in their material life, somewhat successful, always are seeking more. And they propagate that as a success in life. You see, people who live in the material world, they teach them that the more you have, the more you're happy, the more you're successful. But in Krishna consciousness, it's the more Krishna consciousness we have, the more we become, what we say, happy, or what we say, purified. So, now, Narada Muni's watching, and he decides to deter Hiranyakashipu from his austerities. So he takes the form of a dove, and he starts flying around the area where Hiranyakashipu is doing his austerity, and he starts singing the glories of Lord Vishnu loud enough so Hiranyakashipu could hear. Hiranyakashipu is getting disturbed. What's this bird is singing the glories of Vishnu? And he, all just when he thinks of Vishnu, becomes more angry. What to speak of hearing his glories. So he becomes more angry. He tries to throw things at the bird, and the bird just keeps coming back. So finally, he becomes so agitated, the bird won't go away. Finally, he takes out his sword and he tries to kill the bird, but he's unsuccessful. He takes out his bow and arrow, he misses. He's so agitated, this bird is really destroying all his austerities, and that he can't go back and meditate anymore. Success. Narada was successful. And then he leaves his attempted austerity and goes back to his place. So that is called the Garbhadhan Sanskara of Hiranyakashipu. What happened right after that, he impregnated his wife, and that was Prahlad Maharaj. He had heard the glories of Lord Vishnu. given by a pure devotee of the Lord. And therefore, this is mentioned in one of the Puranas. I'm not sure which Purana it's mentioned. Well, that kind of leads up, because there's always a reason besides what we say the Lord's arrangement, that is somewhat the arrangement on this level for something to happen, even if it's transcendental. So, his son is born, Prahlad. Actually, he had four sons. And Prahlad, I think, was the oldest? Or was it the youngest? You don't know. Does it mention it? He was the youngest of the four? I'm not sure. It mentions the names of the other sons also. So now Prahlad is born. But before Prahlad was born, actually, Hiranyakasipu, after he impregnated his wife and she was becoming pregnant for some time, he again went away for austerities. He tried again. And this time the demigods, you can see the picture in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods, they are afraid. In the womb of this woman is a great demon. He's already terrorizing the universe. If this child is born, it's going to be another Hiranyakasipu. We should capture his wife, which they did. They captured her. There's a scene where they're dragging her away. There's a picture. You can see it's in the Bhagavatam here. We placed it on the board last night. It's one of these plates here. And she's being dragged away, not willingly, and they want to take her to their abode, and they're going to wait for the child to be born and then kill the child. Narada Muni knows what's going on. He comes. He always knows where to be at the right place at the right time. This is Narada. So he comes and he stops the demigods. He says, no. Actually, in the womb of this lady is a Mahabhagavat, pure devotee of the Lord. So please release her. Do not abuse this lady. And of course, immediately, Narada Muni, they listen to Narada. So Narada takes this woman to his ashram, and he speaks transcendental knowledge for a long time. And she listened. She was absorbed. But it said, when the child was born, he remembered everything. But the woman forgot. She forgot all the knowledge. And this is interesting, just to divert for a point. Those ladies who are pregnant or going to have pregnancy, and this is also important for the men, that the children, even at that time when the child begins in the womb, it's very, very essential that that child gets transcendental sound. Usually the women comes to the kirtans. When they're home, they read, and the child hears. Maybe can't hear the words, but the vibration helps to purify, or bring about a greater amount of consciousness at the time of birth. So sometimes there's one devotee. He was writing an article. He's a Gurukuli. He has a child now. He was writing this article. Actually, this article is in the Back to Godhead magazine of March, April, I think it is. Yeah, the March, April edition. And she has a little girl, and she's sitting in the kirtan. She's really, really small. And she's going like this during the kirtan, just bouncing up and down like this. And then the kirtan stops, and she goes, oh, no, 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 no. She wants more. So the kirtan began again. And she's like, no, but everybody else, when the kirtan stops, all right. But this little girl is just so enthusiastic for the kirtan. Where does she get that from? I mean, it came from a last life. But even now we know, most of our women know in our movement that expose the child to as much sound vibration before the child is born. And that formulates that consciousness. And then they become, what we say, a devotee from the very beginning. So Prahlad Maharaj was like that. He was already self-realized, and then receiving further instructions from Narada Muni, he became a really great soul. Not only a great soul, but a truly great soul. Well, that was the birth of Prahlad Maharaj. We'll go on to explain a little bit more of this pastime and sequence. I don't want to get too far into the main details of it, because we have at least three or four points. The main thing in this particular presentation is this, just to see how much the demons are enthusiastic for power or prestige. Sometimes it's actually understood that sex life for the demons is not as, what we say, sought after as power is. Power is a type of intoxication. When you can control other people, it gives you a kind of an ego that you feel like. And if you can control them in such a way that they depend on you, because God is what? Brahma, God is, he's the creator, the maintainer, and destroyer. So the demons want to be the maintainer and the destroyer of others. They can't be the creator, and it's not possible. So in order to do that, they get more and more power, more and more power, influence. So it's actually a disease. It's actually a disease. Because it never satisfies. It's just like a person who takes drugs. They get a fix, and then they feel good. But then again, the fix wears off, and then they want another one. And they can't live without it. So the demons just think of many ways to control, to organize, to become more and more powerful. When that comes into a Krishna-conscious society, it pollutes the whole thing. A devotee always thinks how to become more humble, how to become more of a servant rather than becoming the one who has the positions. Devotees will accept positions as a service to the Lord, but not seek positions for their own, what we say, happiness, aggrandizement, influence like that. I remember it was one devotee, very wonderful devotee in our movement, I won't mention his name. When it came time for initiation, and he asked him, you should take initiation, he said, I'm not qualified. Although he was qualified. And then through encouraging him, he accepted it. It came to second initiation, he said the same thing. And then he accepted it because he accepted it as a service. Then they asked him to take sannyas, and I remember he came up with all philosophical reasons why he shouldn't take sannyas. But we defeated him. He took sannyas. And then after that, he was offered to take the position of a spiritual master in ISKCON. He came up with reasons why he shouldn't do that. He never wanted position. That's his whole thing. But he got, we might say, all the positions. Because his mood was just to be the servant of the servant of the servant and not try to aspire for anything. And he always felt himself never qualified. But others could see he was qualified. And he accepted all these things simply as a service. So devotees will accept position and, well, we might even say distinction, just as an opportunity to serve the Lord, to serve, you know, the mission of the Lord. But position is the demons. They want power, they want position, they want control, they want facilities, they want more and more happiness that comes by way of these things. Devotees want happiness that comes by way of service. The more service we can get, or the more we can somehow or other please the other devotees or please the spiritual master by our service, that's what a devotee feels satisfied, happy. But the devotees do accept positions and power in order to propagate Krishna consciousness. as a service to the mission, as a service to their spiritual master. Not wanting it, but accepting it. I remember one devotee was telling me, we were doing a class together, this was in America, and I made the point that when you don't want something in Krishna consciousness, you become qualified to get it. Something material, that is. So this devotee told the story of his life. He said, some of the members of the GBC committee asked him to become a GBC. And he sat there and they talked to him, and he gave so many reasons why he shouldn't be a GBC. He gave health reasons, other reasons, the whole list. They went back, they discussed it, they said, you're a good candidate for GBC because you don't want it. And then he accepted it. But this is a Vaishnava. The Vaishnava always wants to glorify others and serve others, but if they're somehow asked, they don't feel qualified, but as a service they may accept it, like that. But the demons, opposite. Demons want power, demons want positions, demons want distinction, more and more and more. So we hear a little bit about Rani Kashipu and his attempt to become, we might say, the Supreme Lord by proxy. Okay, so it's getting on in time. Any questions, comments? Yes? I don't want to speak his name in class. You can tell, ask afterward, I'll tell you. Yes? Yeah, you have your hand up, right? Okay.
I always wonder if Hiranyakashipu did 10,000 years austerity, so he prolonged his life. But his family members and other demons, how did they live for so long time?
Hiranyakashipu's family members?
Yeah, like his wife. If he married her before.
Yeah. Adi, can you handle that one?
They're on higher planets.
They're on higher planets, yeah.
I mean, he's son of Kashyapa.
Uh-huh.
And so, the same with his relatives, they're all on the higher planets.
It's not on this planet. This is all done in the higher planets, yeah. So they lived a lot longer than us humans. Human beings, life is very, very short. But demigods live 100 years according to their atmosphere, but it's 10,000 years according to our time period. Is that okay? And then you're next, yeah. And he's so peaceful. You never seen him get angry, did you? I have. At me. That's why. That's another story. But it was really sweet anger. So it doesn't mean it's exclusively like that. This is a tendency. I mean, this is mentioned. That a devotee has a certain mood, so he will attach himself to a deity who has the same mood. That deity becomes more or less attractive to them because of that mood. And that's written. Prabhupada writes that, you know. (Clears throat) some people who may have that mood of anger, and that's to say everybody, they might be attracted to Lord Nrisimhadeva. Those who want to kill the demons, they're maybe in that mood. Devotees have that mood. They want to. They can't kill the demons directly, but they in their hearts they want. They're so happy to see demons killed, and that's very Krishna conscious. So when the Lord does it, they celebrate.
Sometimes I have bigger problems with the devotees. I'm angry at them.
Not good. That's not good. You can tell them to tear you apart and give you a little operation here. This is a very important question, and there's different ways. It says that when you feel anger starting to rise, then you count to 10, take some deep breath. Don't try to act immediately. Start to think and reflect about what's happening within you. Because if you let the anger build, then you say something or do something, and then it's like that boy nailing it into the wood. It's even worse. So you just have to realize, okay, maybe I'm getting angry, but I shouldn't. I have to check it. Anger is what we say, neutralized or diluted by forgiveness. When you start forgiving the person who you're becoming angry to, and you find that your feelings of anger go down. Somebody does something to you or says something, then forgiveness is a very glorious quality for a Vaishnava, one who learns how to forgive. So we have to cultivate those qualities that counteract these negative qualities. And in the Bhagavatam, there mentions the qualities and those features that are recommended for counteracting. If you're greedy, become greedy for service. Like that. If you're angry, start to cultivate forgiveness. Like that. Or the immediate response would be to take a deep breath and hold it for a while. And then count to 10. This is recommended. I have a whole series of discussions on this point. I could give you some more things. It's written. I have it written on paper. I can. Because it happens. You see in the Bhagavatam, there's so many situations where one living entity is getting angry with another. How to check that? You know, what's his name, got angry at Ambarish Maharaj, Durvasa Muni. And then he actually acted on his anger. He's an expansion of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva also, in his Rudra manifestation, uses anger to serve, to destroy. So Durvasa Muni became angry, and then he wanted to kill Ambarish Maharaj. He created this fire-eating demon, but Ambarish Maharaj, being a great devotee, immediately thought of the Lord within his heart. And the Lord threw the chakra and killed the demon. And then the chakra went after Durvasa. It's a beautiful story. How the Lord glorifies his pure devotee. So we have to practice. And I use the word practice. We have to practice using those tools that help to counteract these negative things. Success doesn't always come in the beginning, but by practice and by purification of the heart, as we make advancement, then the practice becomes easy, and then after a while you don't have to practice anymore. You just don't get disturbed by these things. I mean, this is a long discussion. There's different kinds of anger. I mean, there's different reasons why anger is provoked. Sometimes we get angry when we see somebody doing something nonsense. And it's not because they're hurting us, but because they're becoming, you know, they're committing some offense in the temple or doing something to somebody else. But try to avoid it by cultivating forgiveness and learning how to check it when it starts to come. Srila Prabhupada, there was one devotee, I think Vijay will remember him, Uttareda. Remember Uttareda? He was that Green Beret Marine. Yeah. He was in California for a while. He was a Kshatriya. He was a fighter. He was in the Vietnam War. He was fighting front lines. And he had this martial spirit. And he was always, like, had that high energy. And Prabhupada told him one time, just do some push-ups. And Prabhupada got down and started, he said, you do like this. When you feel like that, do some push-ups. It works. I try it sometimes. It works. You have to channel that energy in a different way sometimes. But ultimately you have to purify oneself from that consciousness by making advancement. As we make advancement in Krishna consciousness, then we don't get disturbed by these things so much. Okay. Oh, Mathura Anand, let me see if I get it right. Adalya Chandrika. There's so many Chandrikas.
I have seen her question that she has, Hiranyakashipu was doing this austerity and that in the end was like without the body, only scalp was.
Yeah.
He
knew the pranayama system. He circulated his life air within his bones. He was so proficient at pranayama that he can preserve his life without a physical body.
But he was losing skin.
Yeah.
After when he stopped, he had
a
body, or?
Well, Brahma gave him a new body. When Brahma came, he sprinkled him with his water, and then as soon as he did that, he had a right powerful body. You can see that thing. He was like, you can see a picture. He's like, became a golden body, actually. So Brahma gave him a new body. Mm-hmm. Yes, Prabhu. Low self-esteem is a result of not being able to be. It's just the counteracting. You couldn't be great, so I'm low. You tried, you failed. Low self-esteem means I tried in different ways, and now I realize I'm just useless. It's Maya. It's all material. A devotee feels himself low because he knows that's his position. To be humble, to be low, is your position. So that's not artificial. That's real. Low self-esteem means I tried to do something, I wanted to be great, and I wanted to be this, I wanted it, I couldn't do this, I realized I failed, I'm just useless, worthless. I resign myself. And that relegates one to inactivity. Humility actually inspires one to do more and more service. More low self-esteem makes one want to back away from everything. So that's material. Prabhupada was very humble. But he was, but he, look how much he did. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.